Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to episode 285 of the Falcoholic Live, our first post-draft program here immediately following what was a very exciting and somewhat controversial Falcons draft this weekend. We're going to get into it. I'm, of course, your host, Kevin. I'm Falcoholic Kevin, joined by my co-host. He is Adnan Ekic at Say Which Way. Adnan, how are you doing on this fine evening?
Good. It was a beautiful day in Atlanta. The weather's getting a lot warmer. I'm kind of upset about Bally Sports cutting off Comcast, because that was my way of watching the Braves. So, I know I'm not alone. I know I'm not alone on that boat. So yeah, Bally, Comcast, figure that shit out.
Yeah. No, yeah. Get your shit together, Bally Sports. Okay. We got people trying to watch. It's the Braves, right? That's who's affected. It's the MLB. Yeah,
the Braves package. And the Hawks. But
and
the Hawks.
Season, well, yeah. But it United. Would be the Hawks.
Well, no, not United. Not United anymore. That's Apple TV. But yeah, Braves and Hawks.
Yeah, Braves. That's ridiculous. Completely ridiculous. Get your shit together, Bally Sports. No question. But we'll save that for the Bally Sports pod. Probably coming very soon, actually, now that June's around the corner. But we also have with us to break this down. We were like ships passing in the night during the live show. I know Daniel's got tons of responsibilities, but we're happy to get him on another live show here on Wednesday. Of course, Daniel Flick at By Daniel Flick. Daniel, welcome back. How are you doing?
Man, I am so happy I'm back on this podcast. Truly, truly a pleasure. I love being on here. Love the fans, love all the viewers. And really, honestly, I feel bad I couldn't make it for the live show. It was a hectic few days, but I'm glad I'm here. I'm glad Go I'm ahead. Here ready to talk ball for an hour, however long I'm on here for.
Yes, we will get into it, guys. We will give our unfiltered thoughts after a few days to digest. I know some things have changed. We've had some time to process. Maybe level heads will prevail. Maybe not. Maybe the takes are hotter than ever. That's why you're here, to find out how things have adjusted. But we will be getting into all that stuff tonight, guys, and more as we break down this entire Falcons draft class here on the Falcoholic Live. Before we get fully into it, and before I forget, let me bring you a real quick word from tonight's sponsor, betonline.ag. Folks, BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, if you can watch it, apparently, since Bally Sports is screwing up. But, golf, NBA for the remainder of the playoffs, and the NHL playoffs as well. You can get all the latest stats, news, and scores as you follow your favorite teams to the playoffs, championships, and beyond. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Unfortunately, the NFL betting at this point probably going to be limited to NFL futures, maybe rookie of the year odds if you're a big time degen and you want to bet on that already. I'm not here to judge. This is up to you, and if you want to bet on it, BetOnline's got it, and you can head to that website today, betonline.ag, or use your mobile device to get on.
I'm not endorsing this at all, but I'm pretty sure there is at least one degenerate out there who's going to be betting on roster projections for post training camp. So
if it's available, I'm sure BetOnline has odds on it. And if it's not, then maybe you should send them an email and maybe they'll add it. Yeah, just
do
for
not
you.
Not bet on rosters for training camp.
Don't do that. But if you're gonna do it, do it at BetOnline. BetOnline, where the game starts, ladies and gentlemen. But
hang on. Is there an option to bet the first round of roster cuts, like the first seven?
I would actually bet on that, just because I'm gonna be making like probably four roster projections before that happens. So I feel like I'm on the cutting edge of that. But yeah, I don't know like how many people, for like the seven people that would bet that would be amazing. But I don't know if there's enough like movement on that sort of bet to have an actual projection there. But
it would be you. It would be Aaron Freeman.
Yep. No. Corner of the market. Yeah. It would just be the two of us dueling our roster projection bets, and maybe they'd make like $20. I don't know if it's worth it to them, but if it was, definitely check it out. But guys, welcome into the show. Thanks for joining us tonight as we get into the off season. Of course, we're going to have a busy couple weeks here breaking this down, getting a lot of different thoughts and opinions and takes on all these draft picks and undrafted free agents, sort of the off season as a whole, as we gear up for mini camp and training camp here over the next couple months. But let's Adnan and I talked for literally 15 plus hours. So Daniel, we'll let you get the first take in here. How shocked were you about the Michael Penix selection? Because, I mean, I know Adnan in particular, I like saw it leaked by mistake. I was looking to see if there was a trade announced. And the Penix pick was leaked like 5 minutes early. I was like, oh, great, cool. So then I had to like keep a straight face on the program for like 5 minutes. Adnan did not have to keep a straight face. In fact, the face was not straight and it was amazing. It was wonderful. We're probably going to crop that off and meme it later. But what was your reaction to the pick? Because I mean, even though I had to keep a straight face, I was definitely shocked at the time.
Yeah. The first thing I'll say, I think Jesse Bates said yesterday that it was kind of like he got drafted with the way that his phone was blowing up. I've never been drafted, but I'd like to think that's how it felt like for me too. Cause you know, I was writing and, you know, I had however many, you know, player shells already written of like, if they draft this guy, it's ready to go and just publish it. Penix was not one of them. And so as I'm scrambling, trying to like compile this, my phone's just vibrating like crazy. And I'm like, this is wild. But, you know, my initial reaction was, I was very confused. The more that, you know, the more that's come out about the process behind it and why they chose that route, the more you can see the picture, you can see the vision. I don't personally agree with the vision. I don't think a lot of people do. And I think that's kind of, you know, in this draft aftermath where a lot of us are, is it's like, okay, I know why you did it. That doesn't necessarily mean that's the route that you should have, you know, pursued. Again, I don't fault them for taking this approach of like, hey, we might not have a chance to add a player of this caliber at this position. I think it would be a lot easier for fans to accept it if Penix was like unanimously viewed as like a top 10 draft pick or, you know, as this, you know, surefire home run quarterback. Now, of course, if he is that, he's not lasting until pick 8, right? But the whole idea for me with this team is if you're going to go out and you're going to spend all the money you spent last year and you're going to spend all the money that you spent this March and you hand out $180 million contract with $90 million guaranteed and you're all in on Kirk Cousins, you would think that would kind of lead you down this road of like, hey, we have a window of about 3 years here that we can really maximize. And I felt like the way Atlanta approached round one with a roster that has the pieces capable of winning now, they had a chance to really maximize that window. And it feels like instead of opening it further, they kind of close it. And again, you know, you could see how Cousins camp reacted to it. And that's just a terrible way to kind of start that relationship. And to me, it's just, it's not, if you're really all in on winning, I think what the move says is like, hey, we're trying to, and again, they've even come out and said this, that it's all about, you know, the long run. This is a fan base that hasn't tasted the playoffs in 6 years and a fan base that wants to win and that feels ready to win and believes it has a roster ready to win. And to me, if you're drafting a player in the top 10 that won't see the field for 3 years, you're not really helping that cause. So again, I understand it. I don't fault them for it. For me personally, I was very surprised, and I don't know that I would have personally made that personal choice if I was in that chair.
Yeah, it's definitely bold. It's the boldest move I can remember this team making since I've been covering them, which started, you know, in 2014 and ramped up in 2016. So, you know, we'll say 10 years, make it easy. And you know, in some ways it's like, oh, that's nice. Like they won't be boring. You know, this is a very not boring draft decision here. And I'm very interested to see how it pans out, but I think when you come back to this, it's like, I think fans thought this was going to go in a very different direction given the typical way teams approach the offseason when they sign the most expensive quarterback in free agency. And, you know, they hadn't been a winning team in 6-7 seasons, however many it was. You know, I think the expectation was that, oh, they're going to push all the chips in to try to win over the next 2 years while Cousins is affordable. And then we'll hope for the best after that. Instead, it seems like the idea is we're going to sign Cousins so that we can win over the next 2 years. But really, the window that we're eyeing is more like 2026 as the start of our Super Bowl window, not right now. And I think that was quite jarring. It was jarring for me. I think it was jarring for most people, and Adnan included. And you know, Adnan, what do you think about now that we've sort of had time to kind of process this and see that maybe it was our assumptions about the win now window that were faulty. Do you have a different opinion on the pick, or are you sort of, does the understanding that maybe this, the window is further in the future, does that help justify it all to you, or are you still pretty questionable about the pick itself?
Oh no, I don't like the pick at all. I didn't like the pick on Thursday, and just because it's, what, 6 days later, like, I didn't completely change my opinion just because the Falcons, you know, made the pick and then went on, let's be honest, a bunch of PR spins regarding it, regarding, like, what they're going to do, regarding, like, you know, how they tried to trade back up, how they how they're looking at this as, like, a way. I just don't like the half. Like, if you're going to go all in on an approach, go all in on an approach. It feels like they're going a half-hearted approach of, all right, you know, we want to be good enough now, and we also want to be sort of hedge our bets on Michael Penix later on. Because it wasn't just the Penix pick that signaled that this wasn't a win-now sort of draft. The second-round pick, Rook
Ororo. It's what the most fun name I've had to learn to pronounce.
But moving up for Rook and spending a second and a third round pick on someone who's also very, very raw and probably will not make a huge day one impact. And, you know, hopefully he makes a big impact in his rookie year at some point. But I don't think that's the plan. And I don't think given his projections and given, you know, what we're expecting out of him, that he's going to be a huge day one difference maker. Basically, the Falcons came out of this draft with all of their picks intact, plus an extra third rounder, minus a seventh rounder, plus another sixth rounder. And they came out of it without a single person who's probably going to contribute on day one, or without a single day one starter. There's going to be guys who are going to contribute for sure. But I don't know. I just don't like the approach of splashing out on free agency, you know, going with this sort of win now philosophy, and then, you know, pretty much punting the draft because, you know, contrary to popular belief, you don't have to be on two opposite ends of the spectrum with the draft. This isn't a, all right, you're either going to grab, you know, players who aren't going to contribute, you know, who aren't any day one starters, who aren't going to contribute for the next 2 years, as the case with your top 10 pick. It's not either that, or you're only going to get guys who are going to contribute, you know, in year one. You can easily get players who can contribute in year one and then will continue to contribute after year one as well. I mean, you know, you see it with the Lions. They had, you know, a ton of rookie contributors last year, a ton of guys who in the draft were known as guys who were going to make a difference right away from the start. Brian Branch, Jahmyr Gibbs, Sam LaPorta. Those guys are still going to continue to contribute in year two and beyond. Like, that, this isn't an all or nothing like type thing. This isn't a, all right, we're going to do what the Rams did and just trade our picks for like veteran players right away. So yeah, I just don't like being half-hearted on both approaches, because it feels like, yeah, you increased your floor for this year, but you lowered your ceiling this year. And then you may have even lowered your ceiling later on, just because it, you know, you went sort of all in on this. So it's like, it feels like you're trying to get the best of both worlds, but you're always going to have to make some sort of sacrifice at some point. And I don't know, like for me, like with Penix, like I think Daniel makes a great pick. I didn't look at him as a consensus top 10 player. Just because the Falcons took him, that doesn't mean that he's this surefire quarterback, like that's going to be this like elite quarterback later on. I've seen a lot of people on social media talk about how, yeah, well, you know, we've gotten our quarterback for the next 15 years. That's not a given. And I know no first round pick is a given. Like, you know, that's just is the way it is. But I also don't understand this mentality of, all right, we got this guy, we got like the next Patrick Mahomes, or, you know, we got the next Aaron Rodgers or what, like, we don't know that yet. And I mean, personally, I didn't really see Penix as a top 10 draft either way. I do hope completely that he proves me wrong. I do hope that he does end up being the super elite player that we look back on. I would much rather look back and look like an idiot and the Falcons are winning as opposed to looking back and look smart and the Falcons are losing. That's no fun. That's never any fun. That wasn't fun for me at all last year regarding Desmond Ridder. But yeah, it's just I still question the decision. I still question, you know, the pick, and I question just like, you know, I just question everything around it. Like, it just didn't make sense, and there's a reason why the Falcons were the dominating story, because it didn't make sense for anyone.
Yeah, I mean, it was jarring, right? I mean, I think especially at the time, and I think a lot of that comes out of, you know, my personal misreading of their offseason, and thinking that they were more all in than they were. And, you know, that's probably more on me than the team, like, you know, but it was a bold strategy. And like, I think, you know, some people have rightly pointed out that this used to be more of the norm. Like, teams used to draft quarterbacks and stash them more frequently. This was a thing, you know, many years ago. It's not, you know, and honestly, the Falcons with Matt Ryan kind of ushered in the new paradigm, which is that quarterbacks are expected to start right away, especially top 10 quarterbacks. It's really rare that you see a top 10 quarterback that's expected to sit for multiple years before playing. That's just kind of what it is. So, you know, I think that this is very much a wait and see thing. That's why I gave the draft a C. It's like, well, we're probably not going to know the answer. And because it's not an instant impact draft, you know, I don't really feel comfortable giving it more than a C. But also, I don't really feel like I can give it higher than a C because, we're going to have to wait so long to see. And, you know, maybe it does turn out really well. I think the one thing is, like, if you're going to gamble on something, gamble on quarterback, right? So they picked the right position to gamble on. And, you know, I said on the live show, if you're going to pick a quarterback outside the top three quarterbacks to gamble on as a potential franchise quarterback, Penix is the one to do it because he's got the traits, right? Like, as much as, you know, J.J. McCarthy might have made more sense from an age standpoint, I think J.J. McCarthy's ceiling is like 15th best quarterback. I think there's a world where Michael Penix Jr. could be a top 10 quarterback. I mean, if you look, his highs are as high as you can go. I mean, he has some absolutely insane throws on tape. He does have that dual threat ability, even though he kind of has been reluctant to use it since his injuries, which is probably smart. Penix does have the upside that's there, but he also has, you know, some flaws, and, you know, a lot of NFL teams just don't like left-handed quarterbacks. They have to call things differently, and I think teams just don't like that. That's why we haven't seen very many of them. But, you know, I think if you're going to gamble on quarterback. So that's to me, it's like, okay, you're taking a big gamble at eight. At least you're gambling on the right position. But again, to echo what both of you said, it's like it feels like they're trying to have their cake and eat it too. Like, they're trying. The signing of Kirk Cousins is sort of the team's attempt to win right now, but they're not really like win now. It's like we're trying to win now, and like dropping Kirk Cousins into this roster and being in the NFC South helps a lot, right? You don't necessarily need to have an elite team to win the NFC South. We saw that last year. You could be pretty mid and win this division and make the playoffs and maybe even win a playoff game. I mean, the Bucks won a playoff game last year. So, you know, because of this team's situation, they have sort of an easier ramp to playoff success. And that might sort of weigh in on their decision to go with a more future focused draft and free agency in general. But it's very much like they're trying to straddle two things. They're trying to get to the playoffs and win today, and also trying to win in 2 years. Like, I think their true Super Bowl window starts in 2026 with Penix, you know, coming in. And again, it's like that. It's not like the worst idea in the world, but it doesn't really. No one's really tried this before. So it's like it's very bold, and it's like if they don't make the playoffs, like, are they even gonna see Penix see the field at any point? Like, that's how kind of bold this whole gambit is. It's like the Ridder gambit turned up to 11, essentially.
The one thing, I don't mean to cut you off on this, but the one thing we didn't talk about much at all over the course of the draft show is if this, you know, Super Bowl window is in 2026, that's sort of this is sort of that sacrificing, you know, the future for the now. And you're never going to feel the fruits of this rookie contract for Penix. The big, you know, plus with taking a rookie quarterback, especially in the first round, is, you know, you have his rookie contract, and that's just, you know, the biggest advantage in the sport of football from a salary cap perspective. A quarterback who is on a rookie contract with Cousins, of course, the next 2 years are going to be, you know, this year is a $25 million cap hit, next year is $40 million. But then even after that, let's say you cut Kirk Cousins, you're either going to have to swallow a 2026 $36 or $35 million dead cap hit, which I don't think the team is going to do, or you're going to have to swallow a $22.5 million dead cap hit in 26, and then there's another $12.5 million in 2027. And when you combine that with Penix's rookie contract, which by 2026, by that fourth year, 2027, he'll be making over $6 million. You will pretty much have $20 million in a cap hit invested in the quarterback position throughout all four of Michael Penix's rookie season deals, or all four of his years in his rookie season. And then the fifth year option is going to be over $20 million either way. And there's going to be over $30 million invested in what would be Penix's, you know, rookie season, that third year where, you know, Cousins is the $22.5 million hit. So you're sort of punting away this huge advantage you have in having that rookie quarterback of, you know, the rookie deal. You know, you're not benefiting from the rookie deal at all in this case.
Yeah, that's a big part of it too. And, you know, the contract is kind of complicated, and that's, I think, why some people are misunderstanding it, myself included, you know, particularly that the 2026 roster bonus actually guarantees in 2025, and you can't cut him in 2025. So he effectively has an extra $10 million guarantees that I think a lot of people aren't considering, because initially it looked like it was only a $25 million dead cap in 2026, but it's really 35. Now you can split that between 2025 and, or 2026 and 2027, you know, with the post June 1st cut. So it's more like a, you know, $15-16 million cap, and that's manageable, but you're not exactly, like you're saying, you're not really getting the full benefit of that rookie contract. But again, if he turns into a franchise quarterback, it doesn't matter, right? Like that's the gamble they're taking, that they think he is a franchise quarterback. He can be a very good future quarterback for this team. And when he comes in 2026, he's going to be great, and therefore no one's going to care. I mean, Daniel, is that sort of where you're at with this, where like, it, do you agree that like if Penix becomes a franchise quarterback, then all is forgiven and it, you know, it, they look like geniuses essentially?
Yeah, here's for me where this whole idea becomes really interesting. It's a big hypothetical, but again, the Falcons expect to be in the playoffs in 2024 and 2025. What happens if you go, you know, 12-5 this year or next year or whatever? How about 2025? Let's say they're playing, I don't know, San Francisco on the road. They lose by 3 because, you know, there's no pass rush, you know, late, and they just, you know, there's that element involved there where it's like, okay, we've had 2 years with this guy. We could have drafted a pass rusher at number 8. Instead, we chose to, you know, try to cement our future at quarterback. We've got this veteran player under center who's now led us to, you know, however many, you know, again, I guess a 12-5 year in this hypothetical in 2025. And it's like, great, we have this future, but we also had a team that's actually capable of competing this year, and we didn't have a pass rush. All the while, and again, this is where the class around Penix becomes so important, right? Because what if the edge guys end up not being what a lot of people think they are? I think Latu has a very safe floor. And so, again, one of those guys has to win top rookie this year, right? And one of those guys was available. Whoever wins it was available for Atlanta. That's where it's going to be a real test of patience with the fan base, a real test of patience with the front office, with everybody involved, because you can sell it however you want to sell it right now of like, hey, this is great for our long term. This is great for all this. And it's really easy to have a long term outlook on May 1st or on April 25th or on whatever day in the, you know, throughout OTAs or whatever, it's really easy to say, oh yeah, this will be great in 2026. But when it's January 28th or whatever, and you're, 3 days removed from losing a heartbreaker because you didn't have a pass rush and you could have drafted a guy who would have helped you in that moment, and the guy that you drafted instead watched from the sidelines the entire season, that's where I think it gets hard to accept. But again, now to answer the question, because that was a big side tangent, my apologies on that. But
that was a great point.
It's a good point.
I've kind of been resting on that for a while. I was trying to find the right time to say that. But the other part of it for me too is I do think that if you can find the long-term solution at quarterback, it is all worth it. I mean, all we've heard for the last week is this is a position that they value more than every other. And again, for very good reason. Again, if Penix becomes this franchise quarterback, whatever missed opportunities you get in the next two, the next 3 years, assuming that he hits this level that they feel like he can, there's a very strong chance he'll end up leading the franchise to, again, whatever it felt like he could have reached within these next two. And if you get that chance to draft a guy who will be there for the next 10, 15 years, again, I don't fault them for that. I completely understand that. And I do think it kind of makes it all okay. But again, that's a conversation that we're going to have, because, you know, you guys are mentioning 2026. There's a very real chance it's 2027. I think my initial reaction was 2026 as well, but it's very possible it's 2027. And then you got to make the whole fifth year option choice, and you haven't even seen the guy play regular season snap. And it's like, now what, you know? And so there's a lot of hurdles you have to clear in this situation for it to work out the way that they want it to work out. I think there's an avenue where it does. But I think it's really a pins and needles situation for the next 2 years, personally.
Yeah. And I really like the point. I made a similar point on the draft show of, you know, I think we all agree, and I think we're all in agreement that the Falcons are probably going to be favorites to win the division this year. And I don't think any of us will be surprised if this team wins 10, 11 games. And, you know, I've seen it, you know, in my mentions on social media of, oh yeah, this roster is like still really good. You know, they were a quarterback away from winning three more games last year, which is true. Now it's very different in a year to year in the NFL. Every single year, the division is very weak. The schedule is very manageable. But you know, there's always, you never know how the ball is going to bounce at the end of the day. But my argument was, if this team wins 10 or 11 games, if this team is in a position to do that without that much contribution from the draft, that's even more reason to have gotten players, you know, who are more ready to win now, because, you know, that could be the difference between, you know, a one and done playoff appearance and something that could possibly be very special. And I keep seeing the Jordan Love, you know, comparison over and over. And, you know, Terry Fontenot directly referenced the Green Bay strategy. And everyone's looking at Jordan Love right now like, oh, that was like a home run pick for the Packers in 2020. And, you know, that's you know, the ends justify the means that you guys are talking about of, if the quarterback is good enough, then, you know, it doesn't matter. But the Packers won 13 games in 2020. They won 13 games in 2021. In 2021, they lost the divisional round by 3 points. And, you know, they could have easily, you know, had they taken a T. Higgins at 26 instead of Jordan Love, who T. Higgins was still very good in his rookie year. Could we be talking about the Packers as a team that possibly could have made the Super Bowl that year? Could they have possibly won it that year with Aaron Rodgers playing as the MVP and with their defense being what it was under Matt LaFleur that season? So, you know, that's just one of those things that people don't really consider when it comes to Jordan Love. It's just, oh, look at how successful, you know, look at how much it worked out for the Packers. But, you know, it depends on what lens you're looking through. Because, you know, someone could argue maybe it wasn't that successful for the Packers because then it cost them, you know, what was left of the Aaron Rodgers era over there. And, you know, they sort of went down with a whimper of never winning another playoff game under Rodgers after making that pick. But yeah, at the end of the day, if Penix, you know, is who they think that he's going to be, if he ends up being, you know, this Pro Bowl, you know, level player and this elite quarterback that keeps this team in relevance for the next decade, it's utilitarianism. It's, you know, the ends justify the means. And we can sit and, you know, we can sit here and debate the process all we want. I didn't like what the process it was with this, but at the end of the day, nobody's really going to care. And I don't think we'll really care about what the process was either if we're watching Penix, you know, lead this team to the playoffs year after year. But, you know, that's what the gamble is. They're making a huge gamble with it. And like you said, Kevin, there's no guarantee that they'll even be around, you know, to bear the fruits of what they sowed with Michael Penix, because, you know, with Terry Fontenot, this is going to be year four for him. I know that they got rid of Arthur Smith, but, you know, Terry Fontenot doesn't all of a sudden go back to zero as if he's a brand new, like, you know, general manager who's never, you know, who just now stepped foot into Flowery Branch. Like, it's still been 3 years of 3 7-win seasons. Terry Fontenot did play a hand in that. And it's not a, you know, I think Raheem Morris is a lot safer, so to speak, if the team loses this year. But if the team has a losing season this year, if the team doesn't achieve its goals, then, you know, I think it's very safe to assume that Terry Fontenot is going to be on a very hot seat going into next year.
Yeah. I think they have to win. And I think that's why Kirk Cousins is here. Like, I think that's why they signed Kirk Cousins, because they knew the Falcons fans will not tolerate another losing season. We need to start winning games. And I think the idea behind it, as flawed as it could be, right? Like, this is my devil's advocate, or, like, you know, fan advocate, whatever you guys want to say, right? Because I think you guys have covered a lot of my criticisms very well, so I don't really feel the need to repeat them. I agree with most of what you guys are saying. It's just, the positive could be, obviously, if Penix becomes a franchise quarterback, then it doesn't really matter what you did to get him, right? If he becomes your future quarterback and he's a top 10 quarterback, it doesn't really matter. And the fact that you only had to pay an 8th overall pick and 2 years of not getting great rookie contract value, that's a relatively small price to pay for a franchise quarterback. So you look pretty smart in hindsight with that. But what Daniel said, I think, is also important. Like, what did you miss out on? What's the opportunity cost for drafting Penix instead of Roma Dunze, instead of trading down and taking Laiatu Latu, that sort of thing? Because I think if the Falcons didn't draft Penix, they would have traded down with the Raiders, who we know wanted Penix. So, you know, I don't know what it looks like. Do they have another second round pick from that? Are they able to do some other things instead? You know, it's something that's really hard to know. But I think the points that you guys brought up are very good. Like, that's kind of what I fear the most, is like, the things go well, and it's like, if they had actually maximized, maybe we could have won a Super Bowl. But instead, we're focused on the future. But the upside of that is, once Cousins leaves in 2026, maybe the team doesn't fall off, and maybe they do build what they said they wanted all along, which is a sustained winner. And like I've said on many shows before, the best way to win a Super Bowl is to be a sustained playoff team, to make the playoffs every year. Because when you get into the playoffs, anything can happen. And if you're making the playoffs every single year, you're increasing your chances to win the big game. You know, you're more bites at the apple, because the Super Bowl is way more luck-based than I think anyone will ever admit. And you need some good luck to win it. And if you're there multiple times, there's more and more opportunity for you to have that good luck happen. But, you know, I feel like we could have a whole show dedicated to Michael Penix and the pick and the implications and all that. Before we move on, I do want to get to some questions from the chat. And Maddie Ghost with a couple of donations here. Read those off. Thank you for the $20, Maddie. Appreciate you. Big time. Appreciate you. Says, so I'm reading some speculation that Kirk won't be ready for the season opener because of the timing of his surgery. Why guarantee the contract if he's injured? Might explain the desperate move for a quarterback. I do not think that's correct. I don't think any reports on Kirk's health are accurate at this stage. I think the belief is that he will be ready for week one and probably training camp. But other than that, we don't know any specifics. There haven't been any specifics announced. So anything else, I think, is kind of speculation. But we do know that the Falcons probably tampered to get Kirk Cousins' medical information. Allegedly, probably tampered to get Kirk Cousins a medical evaluation with their training staff, or to have him send over their stuff and talk to their top trainer.
Yeah, that was a very, very quick signing for a team that, you know, needed to give him a physical. And, you know, I'm not saying that they tampered, but, you know,
Yeah.
If I was a betting man, if we were doing the bet online.
Yeah, just bet online, have odds on that. Yeah.
It would be like negative 10,000 odds.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they might have done it. I think they might have done something there. But, you know, and I know Maddie continues saying, you know, why would you sign a vet to put him on injured reserve with guaranteed money? And then you draft an injury prone quarterback that's priceless and desperate. Yeah. So I think they like Penix regardless of anything happening with Cousins. I think they got Cousins and then they got Penix. I don't think the two are like linked necessarily. Like, I don't think their concerns about Cousins are related to their love for Michael Penix. I think they just thought Michael Penix was, they had Michael Penix as QB2, right? So they had him above Jaden Daniels and Drake May and all that, which I think is pretty aggressive, but that's what they thought. So that's why they took him at 8. And to give the Falcons credit, they played it like masterfully, to get Penix at 8 without a trade up, because apparently there were teams that were really interested in him, especially the Raiders. The way they played it was, it fooled the hell out of me. It fooled the hell out of everyone. I think there was like one report that was like, oh, the Falcons are actually interested in Penix. And everyone laughed it off because they thought it was so ridiculous. And maybe it was ridiculous, but it was true. So, I guess you have to tip the cap because they fooled everyone. I mean, like, no one thought they were serious about Penix. They probably had teams calling them, telling them about how much they wanted Penix and wanted to get up to the 8th pick. And the Falcons were like, well, I guess we can't trade down now because we know everybody wants Penix. So, I mean, I guess you got to tip the cap to that bit of subterfuge there. I will say
this about Penix. So, you know, a lot of quarterback success doesn't always come down to talent, right? A lot of, and this is just me looking at this from a more positive sense, because I've had people telling me for days how I need to be much more positive about it. You know, everyone has their opinions, but a lot of the really successful quarterbacks have really successful situations around them. You know, good wide receiver room, good offensive line, coaching, a franchise that's really fully invested in them, and a franchise that's fully invested in putting the right pieces around them. You know, Patrick Mahomes, for example, has had Andy Reid, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, you know, ready made when he got there. Aaron Rodgers stepped into a Green Bay team that was very, you know, very strong before he took over the starting job. I will say with Penix, he will be stepping into a very good situation. And I've seen people say, you know, in the national media that they would be upset if they were in Michael Penix's shoes. I wouldn't really say that, because Michael Penix, when he does step into that starting role for the Falcons, the franchise has invested so much into him that they will have made everything ready-made for him to be successful. And that means, I think, over the next couple of drafts, they will be making draft picks with him in mind. Next year, probably a right tackle will probably be at the top of their draft board, if I'm sitting here waiting or speculating right now. But they're going to invest heavily in a right tackle. They're going to invest heavily in wide receivers who will work with his skill set. I think they will, over the next year or two, you know, maybe tweak his mechanics a little bit, because he does throw a lot with that upper body, which can lead to some shoulder like issues and some shoulder discomforts. But basically, Michael Penix will be in position, in a really good position, to be really successful. And at the end of the day, it may just, you know, come down to, you know, is he going to be, you know, up to it? Is he going to be good enough to succeed at that level? But, you know, that's one of the really big positives that you can take from a team, you know, that invests this much in a quarterback and that has the luxury of time, you know, before that quarterback starts, because this team isn't going to be making moves that, you know, benefit Kirk Cousins, that have Kirk Cousins in mind over the next couple of years. And that may be one of the reasons why Cousins was upset with the pick. It's going to be all Michael Penix in mind. And, you know, if it works out, it'll be a home run. But, you know, that's just sort of my positive take on the entire scenario.
Yeah, I think it's a difficult dance that they're going to have to do, and they're going to have to manage the relationship side of things too, because I imagine it's not just Kirk that's upset with, you know, the team's direction, but look, it's a business. They got to get over it. I mean, that's the way it is. Like, ultimately what Kirk wanted, I'm sure he wanted security and multiple years of, you know, guarantees and to be the guy and all that. But ultimately what he really wanted was a multi-year guaranteed contract. And that's what he got. He got the contract he wanted. That's why he signed it. So the other than that, the Falcons probably don't feel any special, you know, allegiance. They're like, we gave you what you wanted financially. So why are you booing us? Like, we gave you exactly what you asked for. Like, I'm sure he wanted more than that, but you know, it's a delicate situation. There's no getting around that. But let me get to a couple of these donations and then we'll move on to talk about maybe a few of these draft picks here. other than Michael Penix, because we could probably do an entire Michael Penix show, probably three. And still have almost 40 minutes. I know, right? It's basically been the Michael Penix show. I should change the name in post. But we had Raymond with the $2 says, Raheem took a big gamble. Do we still make the playoffs? I think yes. Like, I thought this team was a playoff team before the draft. So the fact that, like, I don't think them not getting an instant impact draft makes them not a playoff team. My opinion is that, like, they didn't really do anything to elevate them into the upper echelons of the NFL. They're going to win the NFC South. But how big of an achievement is that, really? Like, you know, and we'll see. Like, I think you could certainly see a scenario where they're right about a lot of these players and things go right and they don't deal with way too many injuries and they actually overperform and do really well. And then it comes back to like, oh, well, could we have won a Super Bowl if we actually went all in, you know? But like, I think ultimately, like, the floor of this team is like no worse than last year's team. Like, I think this team is going to do better than last year, even if things go wrong. But I don't know that the ceiling is as high as it could have been. That's my main criticism of this plan, is that I think the ceiling could have been Super Bowl, but I think in some ways it's sort of like unusual to see a team sort of admit that they actually don't think that this, like, that they don't think that this roster over the next 2 years, even if they went all in, was going to win a Super Bowl. And most teams are too cowardly to actually make that sort of decision and like actually do that. And so maybe we should applaud them for being like actually honest with themselves and being like, even if we go all in over these next 2 years, are we really winning a Super Bowl? Like, honestly? And if the answer is no, then maybe they're doing the right thing. It's just not what fans want to hear. It's not what I wanted to hear, but you know, it's bold. I think the thing I keep coming away with is this strategy is bold, but when you go bold, you know, it reminds me of Game of Thrones, right? You win or you die. That's kind of how it is. I mean, that's how it is for all front office people and coaches, but like, you know, you either look like you die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain, you know, to get another movie quote in there.
I think like that same idea too, of just like, I feel like everybody, when you get to draft season, is looking at like, oh, like, you know, they got worse, or like, there's this idea of like a perception around a team. If your perception of the Falcons going into the draft was like, hey, they're a good team, nothing that they did should affect that. You know, it's like what Adnan was saying earlier, like they didn't add any like early starters, at least on paper, but still what they had on the roster before that should have excited people, those pieces are still there. You know, there's that, I kind of think it's a little bit of like a recency bias kind of thing where it's just like, oh, hey, like these guys weren't added, or there was a chance to, you know, add this piece and this, you know, whatever element that you want to add. And they failed to capitalize on that in certain cases here, I feel like. But if you were optimistic about Atlanta entering the draft, there's nothing that should have happened in theory that should hurt that optimism, unless you're just scared about the NFC South around them. But really, you shouldn't be, in my personal opinion. And so I don't really think this idea of like, you know, they got worse or just like they're not, you know, I don't think you can actually like say that. I feel as if like if you're confident ahead of time and you have this belief in this roster, the roster in theory only added more pieces who I don't think you can look at a lot of the guys on this, like within this class, and say like, yeah, that's a regression for Atlanta at a certain spot, right? Like it's not, I don't know. I personally have always just been kind of confused about that idea.
Yeah, no, it's tough. It's always really hard to like, honestly, it's hard to do these, even like having these conversations immediately after the draft. It's a lot based on assumptions. It's a lot based on our personal thoughts. And, you know, we won't, it's challenging because we don't actually know what's going to happen for a while. And like, honestly, like people probably shouldn't even really seriously grade draft classes for like 3 years or at least 2 years. but we have to talk about it. And like, it, you know, we have to guess and project and all that, because that's like, the season's going to happen in a couple months. Like, we got to like talk about what's going to happen. And I think the thing with this draft class is, I don't know if it moves the needle for 2024, but maybe it moves the needle for 2025, and maybe it really moves the needle for 2026. And maybe, I think they've just delayed the timeline a little bit longer than I expected, longer than probably most fans expected. And I think that was a jarring change from our expectations. And that led to a lot of very negative responses, and you know, rightfully so, probably to some extent. It's just, you know, at this point, it's like, well, I hope Penix is a franchise quarterback. I hope that's the case. I know we had two donations from Sour Pickle, great name, with the $5, saying, I love Penix. I'm still just really surprised they didn't really address edge, corner, or receiver, even offensive line. But there is a world where I'm super excited about the possibilities of Penix as a Falcon. Yes, and that's the thing. It's like, it's not really about Penix, like, in a vacuum. I think Penix is the quarterback of the ones that were linked to the Falcons that I liked the best. I didn't really think he would be available in the second. I think that was clearly correct. I also didn't think they would consider taking him in the top 10, which was clearly wrong. So, you know, whatever you want to take away from that. But it's also not just about the eighth pick. And I do want to talk about the rest of the draft a little bit tonight. And I'm sure, you know, we'll talk about the rest of these guys more. But it's not just about the eighth pick. And I think the second round pick was another big turning point for this draft, where not only did they take a guy that in Ruka Roro, who I do really like, and I would have been happy with at 43. So I'm not mad about the player. I'm mad about the trade up, because I think giving up 79 was such a premium asset, especially in this class, when you look at the type of guys they could have gotten with that pick. Was Rook Ororo better than someone at 43 plus someone at 79? And again, we won't know for a while, but what we do know, and I think I want to nip in the bud, is people saying like, well, he would have been there at 43. And it's like, I think it's pretty clear that the defensive tackles were going to fly off the board. Like, so I'm not convinced necessarily that Rook would have been there at 43. You can argue whether if he was worth a trade up and or if they would have been better just taking somebody else at 43. But I think it's pretty like the Rams. I don't know if people know this. The Rams traded the most, I think, ever in terms of second round trade up compensation to trade up for Braden Fisk, like right after the Falcons took Rook. So like, clearly teams knew that these defensive tackles were going to fly off the board. So I think the team's belief that they had to move up for a defensive tackle, I think, was legitimate. I just can't believe they didn't take Jerzon Newton. Like, I like, as much as I like Rook, like, I have a really hard time seeing a situation where Jerzon Newton isn't a better NFL player than Rook. And that doesn't necessarily mean Rook will be bad. I just think Jerzon Newton's going to be really good. So it's like, I think he's going to be really good immediately. So it's just, that was a little bit puzzling to me. But Daniel, what did you think about what went down in the second round?
Yeah, I was kind of in the same boat as you, just like with the options that were on the board. I was surprised it went with Ororo.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's three.
We're still working through it. Yeah, man, it's gonna take some time.
That's a fun one.
The guys who are on play-by-play for Atlanta for the next however many years are gonna have a lot of fun trying to learn that one throughout the week. But yeah, no, I was surprised. I think when you see the move up and you think about some of the guys who were available, my initial reaction was like, wow, I'm surprised that was who, you know, the target was. But I'm also a very firm believer in noting that NFL teams know considerably more than we do on the outside, whether, you know, you're a reporter, whether you're a fan, whether you're somewhere in between, you know, a casual observer. There's this, you know, they know so much more, and I don't feel like it's personally right for me to, you know, like say like, oh, these guys are significantly, you know, a much, much clearer, much stronger fit for Atlanta and for, you know, winning now and for all of these things, because they know more about the way these guys are wired than we could even, you know, think about. That being said, and again, I also see the vision with the Roro too, of, you know, the athleticism and just kind of a moldable player. And I see the vision with, you know, I think they've talked a lot about how flexible he can be up front and how they want to use him. But again, I do think that would have been a prime spot where you would have expected a corner, an edge presence. I thought, you know, I thought Johnny Newton made a lot of sense in that spot too. So I was surprised that it was Rook. But again, in these types of situations, especially when you move, you know, beyond the top 10 and everybody's, I believe Atlanta has like, you know, the stacks. It's not even like a straight ranking board, just the stacks there. It's hard for me from the outside, you know, to just kind of sit up here and say like, hey, I can't believe you picked that guy, you know, player A over player B, C, and D, when they have so much more information. So what I can say is that I think you can see the upside, you can see the vision. And I think this is kind of where you could see the start of Atlanta's draft plan really emerge, and the way that they attacked it for, you know, the last five rounds after that, that pick kind of started that process of, hey, there actually is a pretty clear vision of what they want to attack and the types of pieces they want trying to help attack, you know, that upfront area that obviously a lot of us view as a pretty huge flaw entering the weekend.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think it's pretty clear that that was an emphasis point for them. And I think this like lends even more credence to the future focused idea, because right now you look at the defensive line room and you're like, well, they've got Grady Jarrett, they got David Onyemata. Like, why are we investing three picks in the interior when we got two, you know, like 15 million plus, you know, veterans manning that spot? And it's because it's the future, right? Like, we're going to have to make. What's that?
If you want to be technical, they technically invested four picks because they had that third round trade up.
Well, there you go. Four picks, whatever you want to say. Yeah. So it's like, again, this is more proof, I think, that this is a future focused draft, because I think, you know, this is to give them, I think, flexibility next year and going forward. You know, they're probably going to need to move on from one of those guys. I'm not going to even try to speculate about which one it'll be because it's too painful. But, you know, that's a very future focused pick. And I do agree that, like, it's hard to necessarily evaluate exactly what the Falcons want because we haven't seen this defense yet. Like, we don't know what they're going to do. Like, we have an idea based on what Morris and Lake were doing in Los Angeles, but there's no guarantee they're going to run that exact same defense here. You know, it could very well change. So we don't know. It's just speculation. So again, it might be that Jerzon Newton just didn't fit what they wanted, and Rook does fit exactly what they want. Like, if you look at Rook and Brandon Dorlus, it's like, oh, they're looking for this sort of 3-4 defensive end type of guy, clearly. Like, a strong guy that can handle two-gap responsibilities and rush the passer and kind of in between a 3-4, you know, like, in between that sort of 4-3 defensive tackle weight and that edge rusher weight. That seems to be pretty clear that's the path they're going. And then they get someone like Braylon Trice, who, again, super physical type of edge rusher. It seems like they're trying to really just up the physicality of the defensive line, and I don't have a problem with that. You know, that to me sounds great. You know, Zion Logue, even late, it's like, well, this is clearly a long, strong, you know, type of nose tackle, developmental nose tackle, because who the hell knows if Eddie Goldman's gonna make it to camp, you know, at this point. So so that was interesting. But yeah, I mean, to stop on Trice for a minute. I mean, to me, Trice was the one guy I think actually who has a path to potentially starting as a rookie. You know, I don't know if he's going to be able to beat out Ebikadi or Carter or anybody like that, but I think he's the one that actually has a legitimate chance. Like, I can't see Rook or Brandon Dorlus beating out Grady Jarrett or David Onyemata. I think there's like a 0% chance of that happening, right? But Trice could. So what do you think about the addition of Braylon Trice, Daniel, because I think that was one of the more, and Dorlus for that matter, those were the two picks I think that were pretty much universally liked.
Yeah, I was in the same boat about, I think when you look at Trice, you know, some of the things that he's done and how dominant he's been the last few years at Washington, it's very easy, I think, to become enamored with that pick, especially entering the draft and you're like, hey, they need an impact pass rusher. You're not expecting that in round three. Raheem Morris might be, you know, I mean, after what he had in LA, he might be. And again, you're not going to enter the year expecting him to have, you know, 8 or 9 sacks, but I assure you, he didn't think Kobe Turner was reaching 9 sacks last year. You know, and that's a spot that Atlanta's confident in. You know, I distinctly remember the owners meeting Raheem. It was either Raheem or Terry mentioning that, like, hey, this is, Raheem's had success drafting in round three previously. And so Trice to me has, you know, that ready-made skill set, the track record, the intangibles, and a strong understanding of Jimmy Lake and how he's wired and what he wants to run, to where it wouldn't really surprise me if he hits the ground running in Atlanta. And ends up, you know, outplaying that draft slot. And I think there's really a lot of reason for that optimism. I think the optimism is very well founded, actually. And I want to say that was the highest graded pick that I had when I went through it and evaluated everything. I thought it made sense in terms of, you know, where he was selected, what Atlanta's needs were in that spot. And I think there's a very real chance that within the next year or two, he becomes a legitimate, you know, presence off the edge. With Brandon Dorlus, he's very intriguing to me. Very intriguing. I think, you know, again, it's not easy when you're in a Power 5 conference to be a first teamer in 2021, 2023, be a second teamer in 2022. You're talking about a guy who has been consistently productive at a very high level of, you know, within that realm of really the entirety of CFB. It's just like, there's like, hey, like, this guy's good. Like, this guy can play. He's got traits that translate. He's refined, veteran presence. The theme of this draft for me, especially up front, they added a lot of older guys, right? They added a lot of experience. They added a lot of guys who have proven it, you know, for more than 1 year. I think when you look at the guys they added, especially inside, versatility is such a big, you know, asset. And I felt like with Brandon Dorlus, you can kind of see that, like, hey, he can play, you know, wherever they need him to up front. He can play it at a high level too. You start looking at him and Trice and where they ranked, you know, year over year within college football the last 2 years, and pressures and hurries, and very impressive, very, very consistent. And again, one of the things that, you know, the previous regime staff, I should say, mentioned a lot, especially with pass rush, sacks aren't always the most important thing there, right? Pressures and hurries and just, you know, the more you can move and really condense that pocket, and you're making a quarterback feel you in there, that's valuable, right? And you're adding guys who are proven pressure players at a very high level. And to me, if you're going to bypass a pass rusher in round one, if you're trying to sell a fan base and you're trying to sell somebody like, hey, we still think we can add these early impact players up front, you go Trice, you get Brandon Dorlus. I think that was a very strong response from Atlanta personally.
Yeah. I like the D-line picks. Like, even like Rook was a player I liked. It's just, you could tell, I think this is the emphasis on the interior. I think they want to reshape the way that room looks. I think they're going for a different style of player. And that probably means tough decisions, you know, with Grady and David Onyemata over the next 2 years. But ultimately, I think they're trying to do something different on this defensive front than they have in the past. And I like all the investment in that. I think that's been a constant problem. So I think people were expecting it to be more the edge room that was invested in, but the interior, okay, it's fine.
I will say, though, like, with the edge room, they've invested a lot in the edge room over the past few years. Like, we haven't had that one, like, very high impact pass rusher in the mold of a TJ Watt, for example, or in the mold of a Myles Garrett, or these guys who, Michael Parsons, these guys who are these premium first round. Well, TJ Watt was, I think, late first round, but these like superstar pass rushers. But the Falcons have spent a lot of day two draft capital in their pass rushers, you know, Arnold Ebukadi and D'Angelo Malone 2 years ago, Zach Harrison last year, now this year, Brandon Trice. These are all, you know, day two picks, and I do feel like they're trying to, you know, their hope is to cobble together, you know, enough impact from these day two guys to where you can sort of, you know, the sum will be greater than its parts, sort of. But the issue with that is that, you know, this team just hasn't been very good at hitting on their second or on their day two picks in recent history. But, you know, the jury's still out on Ebukadi. Hopefully Ebukadi takes a next step next year. D'Angelo Malone hasn't really done anything. Zach Harrison showed some flashes last year. And then, you know, of course, you now have Brandon Trice in that group. You have Brandon Dorlus, who was a fourth rounder whom I really liked. So we'll see if that ends up working out. But, you know, that's one of those where you can tell that they really want to fix this pass rush. It's just, is it going to be good enough? Are the investments going to be enough to sort of, you know, not have ever invested that premium first round pick into it? And I guess that's something that we're going to see throughout the course of the season. And if it's not, then, you know, it's just wasted day two picks. And that's something that'll really hurt your team in the long run.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's a big part of it. And, you know, I know that the defense, I think, is really what would be standing in the way of the Falcons at this point going far in the playoffs, because I think they kind of overachieved last year. They lost one of their biggest contributors in Calais Campbell. I know people are like, oh, well, they lost Bud Dupree. Like, I don't really think Bud Dupree is like that big of a loss. Like, he's still a free agent, if that tells you anything about how Bud Dupree is viewed by the NFL at large. So he was certainly a nice contributor, but I don't really think they're worried too much about losing that kind of contribution. I think Calais Campbell obviously is a huge one, but is the defense capable of doing much in the playoffs, or can they perform even at last year's level? I don't know. I think there's some regression coming there, but you know, that's definitely part of this consideration. And then, you know, Inspector Deck with the $5 asked, you know, it's hard to believe they're confident in the secondary. I will enjoy watching the defensive line this year. That's a welcome change. Yeah. I mean, I think the lack of secondary investment is certainly one of the biggest criticisms from this class. And you know, that's definitely something we're going to talk about, but, also Inspector Deck, if you're still here, I still need your email address on Discord, so I can send you the gift card. By coincidence, I still need that. So please do send that to me, 'cause I want to get that to you, for sure. But, that aside, let's talk about our thoughts. I know we have a couple more donations. I'll get to those too, before we sign off, but, Daniel, I want to get your thoughts on day three, because we talked about Dorlus, but other than Dorlus, what do you think about the rest of this day three? I thought that was kind of a meat and potatoes, the rest of these picks. Like, let's get, you know, a depth linebacker. Let's get, you know, a special teams receiver. Let's get an RB3. Like, just kind of checking off some roster needs, and not a super sexy fashion, but, you know, let's get a developmental nose tackle. What do you think about their day three picks?
Yeah, a lot smoother than my transition of having to go snag my charger right there. I rookie mistake, showed up unprepared without the charger. Rookie mistake from a guy who's now, I believe, about a year in on my live pods.
Yeah, sophomore mistake now, yeah.
Yeah, sophomore mistake.
The thing about live show, you can get away with that if it's just a podcast, but, you know, live shows, they can see you. They can see us.
Oh, they can. Yeah. I forgot to go mute. It's fine. It happens. You know, when I think about the way that Atlanta ended, JD Bertrand to me was fine. Again, when you're looking at consensus boards, the numbers there are not very favorable for Atlanta. But what I, you know, when you listen to the way that Raheem Morris speaks about JD Bertrand, there's like a real level of belief and passion in who he is. That's hard for me to not, I don't think I can criticize when the guy is as compassionate and convicted in a player at that point in the draft at pick 143 as Raheem Morris in that moment. And again, you can see what he's done. You know, he's led a very prominent program in tackles three straight years, respected leader. There's a lot working in his favor to where it's like, hey, round five, very, very high likelihood that he is some type of, you know, quality special teams player, pretty solid linebacker four. I think he'll give them just about everything they need out of a linebacker four. And if that's what you're drafting in round five, again, there's this idea of like, oh man, you know, very limited upside. You don't really need to be drafting a high impact player in round five. It's great if he becomes one, but that's not really what you're trying to accomplish at that point in the draft, right? Instead, you get a guy who can be a pretty legitimate special teams player for you throughout the entirety of his rookie contract, and play a role that, you know, I remember last year in training camp, we were all watching, you know, pretty closely about like, hey, who gets that last linebacker spot? Yeah. Bertrand looks like a very safe bet to be at least linebacker four for this coming fall. You know, the round six picks, there feels like a lot of – I saw a lot of people frustrated at first of like, oh, you draft a running back but not a cornerback. It's hard for me to get overly emotional one way or another about pick 186, pick 187, and pick 197. That to me is – it is what it is. I, you know, as somebody who's watched McClellan a lot the last however many years, I think he's a very talented football player who never really grew to the level a lot of people at Alabama thought that he would. But again, Atlanta, you know, you lose Patterson in free agency, and you do kind of have a little bit of a question mark behind Robinson, behind Algier, depending on how the staff wants Avery Williams to kind of look at in this offense, right? I don't hate the McClellan pick. I thought it was interesting hearing Terry Fontenot say after the draft that, you know, they look at hit rates for each round. And obviously very high hit rate with running backs in round six and round five and just that whole latter part of the last day. And so, again, if you can add a player who you think can be an impact player at that stage in the draft, by all means. Because, again, the odds of a running back hitting at that point are probably a lot higher than the odds of a cornerback hitting at that point. And so if you're trying to – you know, add however many pieces onto this roster that you feel like can, you know, potentially win a South title this year, right? By all means, again, I'm not going to – it's pick 186, right? I do think McClellan has enough of a well-rounded skill set to where he can be a pretty solid running back three. I think Casey Washington is a very intriguing prospect. You look at the size. You look at the vertical. Shout out D-Led, 39 and a half inches on the vertical. That's Washington's vertical, to clarify, not D-Led's. I'm not sure what D-Led is hitting. Probably not 39 and a half if I had to guess.
That would be a hell of a vert for D-Led. Can you
imagine? Yeah, my goodness.
39 at inches? Least.
Yeah.
I'll have to ask him about that next week, see what he thinks he could hit.
Lightning Led, but, yeah.
Yeah, but
put him out there a cornerback if he's hitting 39 inches, yeah.
You guys remember our talks from training camp about the Atlanta reporters,
the media combine. Yeah.
Might need to do that. Might need to do
that. I'm down. I'm going to train. Like, we have a few months to prepare. So I'm going to get in shape a little bit so I don't tear an ACL right in the 40.
And I hurt my knee roller skating a few months ago. So I can already tell you.
You're too young to be hurting your knee.
You can't do that. We have to protect Daniel at all costs. Yeah.
You're way too young to be hurting. I mean, we all are, but man. Yeah, no, I'll cook everyone when it comes to strength, except for the former players. Like, you know, former players will get me in strength. I'll cook everyone when it comes to the strength portion, and then, you know, after that, we'll see. I have some length.
Yeah, you got some good, some good length. You got the ups,
I was
though?
Walking around the day after that roller skating accident, just limping around covering a basketball game, actually, in Illinois, and I was just wounded. But I had a fine. I didn't have to. Luckily, I got very fortunate. There's media seating behind the scorers table, and there's media seating like on the moon at this Illinois basketball arena. And I was like one of the five people there who was like behind the scorers table. So that worked out well for me. But yeah, if I had to walk to the moon on the knee, it would not have been pretty. I'd probably still be walking up there. But yeah, on the topic of, you know, my trip to Champaign, Illinois, it's a great transition to to revisit Casey Washington. But, you know, he played his best game at Illinois in his last, had three touchdowns, over 200 yards, 10, 11 catches. An ascending player, very interesting journey. The thing he talked about a lot afterwards, just how big of a chip he has, you know, and you kind of look back at a lot of players will say that, but he actually was pretty heavily overlooked throughout his recruiting process. And again, even throughout the spring, even though he's jumping, you know, through the roof and athletically gifted. I think if you're going to take a swing on a round six receiver at pick number 187, you got to look at traits. And I think that he'd be in terms of what you're looking at on paper, I can see why there would be excitement there. And then with Logue, I thought that was, again, it was what it was. You're looking at 197. I distinctly remember however many years ago, one of the NFL Network guys was saying that, like, when you're at this stage in the draft and you're, you know, selecting linemen, you want guys who can stay on their feet. He was talking about offensive linemen, but I still think it applies when you're talking about guys, you know, on either side of those trenches. If you're big and you've got experience playing at a high level of football and you've proven you can hold your own, again, who am I to say, like, hey, what are you doing, right? And if you're trying to just add beef and add guys who, again, have proven that they can last within a very – again, you're not going to find an NFL environment in college football, but if you are, I tend to think that the practices you have at Georgia and playing within the SEC is probably about as close as you'll see. Hopefully the viewers won't come at me for saying that. I love the Big Ten as much as the next guy, I promise. But, you know, I still think that with where they were at in that moment, you're not really losing a whole lot. It's pick 197. And you add a guy who, again, has proven he can hold up against high quality opponents. The moment won't be, you know, overwhelming for him. It's not like he's, you know, he will not show up unprepared. And so I think that's a fine. I thought their overall, you know, third day was fine. Again, nothing throughout this whole draft really moved me one way or another. But again, you could kind of keep seeing that vision built, especially up front. And so I thought overall it was a fine third day. It wasn't anything I would, you know, write home, you know, heavily about, but it got the job done, I felt.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And that's kind of how I feel too. I think, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, Casey Washington, he's going to be like the Drake London understudy. I think Casey Washington's, it would be nice if he could be the Drake London understudy and be Drake London's backup. I think the starting point is maybe like Kadarrell Hodge, you know, sort of level player. And like, no slander to Kadarrell Hodge. This is a like
six. That's a big win.
Yeah, if that's a 6-year NFL vet, great special teamer. Like, so I think that's kind of what they're hoping he is. Someone who has some ability, can play inside, outside, can play special teams. And I think, you know, Washington does have some potential to potentially be more than that. But I think if he can hit that Kadarrell Hodge sort of comp, which is kind of how I feel about him right now, that I think that's definitely a good pick. And I like Jace McClellan too. I think he's actually super underrated now that I've seen him a little bit. Like, I didn't really scout running backs at all. I didn't think the Falcons would really mess with it. I was like, well, if they get one as an undrafted free agent, I'll look into it. But I just didn't really scout it, so I didn't really watch him. But I think he looks like an RB3. Like, I think he's a capable RB3. He can pass block really well, which is going to help him a lot.
That's huge for any young running back. Pass blocking is what's going to get you on the field.
Yeah, so he's got that. I think he can do a little bit of everything. I mean, I don't think he really has huge holes in his game. I think he has good vision. I think he isn't super athletic, you know, and he's not as big, you know, he's not huge and he's not super athletic. He's just kind of like checks all the boxes, and I think that's a great RB3. So I have no problem with that pick. But yeah, let me get to these last few donations real quick before we sign off tonight. Appreciate everyone for hanging out with us. Please like, subscribe, all that good stuff. Thank you for your donations, everyone, as well. We got Corey with a couple here. Let me get to. Thank you so much, Corey, for your donation. I believe this was $6 in total. So Corey is worried that the Falcons obviously were wrong when they disrespected Ryan, and now he's worried they've sort of doubled down by overreacting to their quarterback issues. That's definitely something we discussed on the live show. Two wrongs don't make a right. I'm worried there's no plan in place here, and I'm not acting like there is. I think in hindsight, Corey, like, and he continues on, you know, year after year, I think this regime has shown that it's either arrogant or clueless, or possibly arrogantly clueless with the first picks, one more shocking than the other. And Corey, I think there is a plan. I think it took me a little bit of like stepping back and looking like more big picture to see it, because it was kind of jarring, right? I think there is a plan. Now, you don't have to like the plan or agree with it. And I think, like, if you're skeptical and don't trust this team, particularly with their day two picks, that is totally justified at this point. I do think there's a plan. I think it's really just like, do you agree with the plan or not? I at first I was like, this doesn't make any sense. Now I think it's that they're just on a longer timeline than I thought. So, you know, I think there is a plan, but it's just like, it's a bold plan. It's a risky plan. It's a plan that may backfire and may not help them, you know, win over the next couple of years, but maybe it helps them be in position to win a Super Bowl. And if they win a Super Bowl, no one's going to care. If Michael Penix becomes a franchise quarterback, no one's going to care. So it's, but I think that's a good point. Like, you know, if you don't trust this, if you don't trust the Fontenot scouting, don't trust the Falcons to win because they haven't done it in like 7 years, then I don't blame you. You know, I mean, they have to earn our trust back. And I think that's what the signing of Cousins is supposed to do, is like provide an avenue for them to win, even though they're not really going all in terms of their roster, free agency, draft, etc. Like, I think that's what the Cousins signing is here to accomplish. Corey had one more saying that the first round pick is so controversial that no one even mentions how bad the trade up of the second was. I think the optics on this draft are terrible. Now a lot of fans are defending the pick because it was bad. Nothing wrong with chalk. Yeah, I mean, Corey, like, to be honest, like, I knew people would come around on the pick. This happens every year. It happens to analysts. It happens to fans. It happens to everybody. Like, because what do you want to do? Do you just want to be salty all year about your draft? No, of course not. Nobody wants to be like that. So, like, of course you're going to try to figure out the reasons behind the pick and see if you can get behind it. And also you're allowed to change your opinion. Like, if you have new information or things change, you could change your opinion. You don't have to stay with one thought just because that's what you initially thought. Like, initial reactions can be wrong. Like, it happens a lot. So, like, but yes, like, also I think the whiplash on this pick has been some of the most severe that we've ever seen.
It's the biggest I've ever seen, because I think I saw the best, like, tweet I've ever seen regarding the draft about it. This is, I think I retweeted it. Someone tweeted it out in like 2020. It's like, oh, my team drafted this player. I've changed my mind after watching some film. I actually think this is now a great pick after thinking that it would be.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I get it. Like, I'm not calling anyone out or, like, saying anything about it. It's just, it is what it is. Everyone does it. Like, fans, analysts, you know, because, like, who wants to be a sourpuss about their team? Like, nobody does. Like, I mean, maybe the real haters do. And shout out to the real haters out there. And you could be a real hater and still be a fan. Like, again, I think a lot of people are like, oh, if you don't get behind the team, you're not a fan. If you hate the pick, you're not a fan. If you love the pick, you're just being a homer and you're not a fan. Like, it, you decide if you're a fan, right? That's not up to me to decide. That's not up to anybody else. You decide if you're a fan. If you can go about it in any way you please. We're just trying to help you be an informed fan that sees multiple perspectives. Sometimes the same perspective, if we all agree, but, you know, we do like to have a lot of guests on, so you get multiple perspectives over time. And you can make your own choices, and you can evolve those decisions and what have you. But it's certainly a controversial pick, and you're not wrong for disliking it. And if you're deciding that you want to get on board with it, you're also not wrong. Like, just, you know, do whatever you want. I don't care. I don't care if you change your mind. It doesn't bother me any. It's just funny to look at from a big meta perspective. But it's not like this is just a Falcons fan thing either. Like, every team. Fans of every team.
I mean, we won't be able to fully judge until 3 or 4 years from now. You know, which brings me to my next topic. That Kyle Pitts picked 3 years ago.
My column, you know. Save that for June. Yeah, we'll talk about the Kyle Pitts as a bust column.
Richie Grin in the second round.
There we go. UCF now legend. Now that we have hindsight. Yeah. UCF legend, Richie Grant. But at least they traded down for that one. It's the only trade down this team has ever made, apparently. But yeah, you know, RIP the trade down dream. But
we're never allowed to mention a trade down.
No, that's what I said. If they didn't make this trade, then I was going to back off of it. So, you know, we're backing off of it for sure. We got Sour Pickle with another $5. Thanks, man. Says, really is interesting about the buzz about the team trading back into the first round. Not sure how they would have managed that. Trade a player or package of picks. My personal opinion, Sour Pickle, great name also, by the way. I don't think it was that serious. I don't really think they were going to be able to get back in the first round. I think they kind of knew that. I think they wanted it to be known that they wanted to get back in the first round for the PR. And yes, if, like, they could get a deal done, I think they would have been, like, happy. But, like, going from 43 into range of Laiatu, it's pretty much impossible. Like, it's not impossible, but it's pretty much impossible. Like, you would have to trade the equivalent to have fair value on a trade value chart. You would have to trade the equivalent of, like, the 15th overall pick to move back into the top 15 from 43. And, like, it's really hard to do that with a future first that no one knows what the value will be. And, like, are they really mortgaging next year's draft for this? Like, I personally don't think they were actually
serious about it. Apparently, they wanted 10 from the Jets without giving
up
8.
That's
ridiculous. And it's like that. It's the equivalent to my buddies in fantasy football coming and giving me their, like, 3 bench players for my, like, RB1, like, probably. And it's like, oh, well, I tried. You know, I think you're right. I think that was, like, a big PR move, because Terry Fontenot couldn't shut up about, like, how he tried to trade up over the next, like, 24 hours after that first round.
Yeah. Yeah, and like Lav S, you know, I know this is a common refrain. I'm not trying to call you out, but like you said, you know, next year's draft is probably done. They were trying to get rid of the picks so that the NFL can't take them. The NFL will just take equivalent picks. Like they can't like not get punished. Like if they're going to get punished, the NFL will take the same value of picks regardless of if they trade them or not. Like they will assess punishment. So, you know, I don't think they're trying to get out of anything. Now, if they had like traded back and accumulated more picks next year, that could potentially be like, oh, they're expecting to lose picks. They want to get extra ones to offset that. But,
you know, but the NFL, that's why you trade all your 2026 picks too, and 2027. And then it's like, you know, what can the NFL
just
really
keep
take?
Trading them, and then they can't take them away. Just like trade the next three drafts, and it's all good. But yeah. And then we got one more from NDY with their first donation. Thank you, NDY, with the $5. Appreciate you. If last Wednesday you told me all the Falcons did in the draft was attack the defensive line and get a backup quarterback, I think I would have been all right with that. Yeah, I mean, if you say it in that order, it implies something different than what they did. But yeah, I mean, you know, on like from a like theoretical standpoint, investing like, you know, four picks in the defensive line, getting a back, you know, getting a few potential franchise quarterback, even if he has to sit for a few, like none of these things sound bad in a vacuum. It's more about the opportunity cost, right? And that's I think where we have the biggest criticism. But yeah, it's, you know, we got a long way to go with this draft. We're going to be talking about this draft for a long time. And like they've set it up this way, right? This is going to be sort of a crowning achievement, or like the beginning of the end, right? Where this type of decision at the top and the very future focused draft going into a season where they kind of have to win because of what's happened the previous like 6 years, it could be a stroke of genius or it could be disastrous. Right. And that's kind of where they are. But like every draft can be like that. You know, maybe we're overrating, you know, how important this draft is in the grand scheme. If they took Laiatu and he was a bust, would it be that different? I mean, at least we'd know probably sooner if that was the case, but it's definitely controversial. It's definitely tough. It's a bold strategy. You know,
I think the difference is, I think, like you said, if you don't take Penix, then you're still searching for your quarterback for the next couple of years. Whereas if you take Penix, you wait 2 years for him to start, and then he ends up being a bust, you're not restarting that quarterback search for another like 4 years. That's the big risk with taking that swing on a quarterback. And I'm not saying like, oh yeah, like don't do it because of that reason. Like, you know, every team makes that risk when they take a young quarterback. But I do think there is a difference between like Penix busting and someone else busting at eight, if it does end up being a bust. Hopefully not.
But Daniel, any final thoughts you want to get out there? Appreciate you sticking with us for the long show tonight. Definitely a lot of takes to get to. Anything else you want to add before we sign off tonight?
No. I want to say appreciate everybody for watching, listening, reading whatever I've written. If you ever have, shout out to you guys.
Definitely do it. Read it. Yeah. Check it out.
Appreciate that. But yeah, no, as always, appreciate you guys for having me on. Truly enjoy hopping on with you all. So hopefully we have a few more, you know, ahead of us. So,
oh yeah.
Appreciate you guys.
Absolutely. We got plenty more, you know, be careful what you wish for. Cause June is like, everyone's like, oh, I'm on vacation. So we might have to have Daniel on like four times, and I wouldn't be upset about that, you know, but
I actually am going on vacation.
Yeah.
Early
that's what I'm saying. Months, like, so yeah. Yeah. You know, I also am going on vacation, so maybe no one gets a show then, but yeah, no, appreciate you, Daniel. Appreciate you making the time and always enjoying, guys. He's at by Daniel Flick on the Twitter X whatevers. We also have with us, of course, my co-host Adnan Nikic. He's at Say Which Way. Adnan, anything you're working on you'd like to let the people know about?
Well, you know, I'm just going to plug thefalcoholic.com. You know, we have everything you want from, you know, draft takes to, you know, draft reactions. I think there's a roundtable that's going to be going pretty soon. Which I probably should add to that. I haven't added to that at all. But yeah, big thank you to Daniel for joining us. Always great to see him. And yeah, just gearing up now. Now we really get into that dead period from like May through training camp, where it's like, okay, now we're really gonna have to, you know,
gotta dig
get
deep.
Through it. Yeah, yeah, we're gonna have to dig deep. But we do every year, and you know what. We get through it every year. So, you know, before you know, training camp will be here.
Yep, that's what I'm hoping for. We could, I mean, we do it like this is like this draft class. We might be able to stretch out like all through May just because of how controversial the Penix pick is. So maybe we can stretch this one pretty far. But yeah, I mean, June is always tough. And July, of course, is training camp preview time. But thank you guys so much for tuning in. I'm Kevin Knight of Alcohol Kevin. Please like, subscribe if you haven't done so already. Leave us that 5-star review on your platform of choice. Check out the Patreon if you're a podcast enjoyer. Check out the channel memberships if you're more of a video viewer. Support the channel, get some exclusive perks, get access to those patron fantasy leagues, which I'm excited to start talking up those more. I had a lot of fun with those last year. And I think, Daniel, did you play with us last year? I think you got in there, right?
I don't know if I touched my roster after the first weekend.
But you participated. Technically,
I did.
Yes.
You know what? It was a great league. I will plug the league. It was very enjoyable.
Very enjoyable.
I'm not sure. Honestly, I think I joined 3 or 4 of them last year. And I'm not sure I checked any of my lineups after the first week. But yeah.
The league drafter, though. Yeah.
Join the Falcoholic League. Fun league.
Good league. Yeah, for sure. But I appreciate you taking part, though, because then we get to claim you're there. You know, they can build the hype. So that's really what it's all about. You know, whether you, I'm sure people will take the free dubs. They don't really care at that point, but you know.
Yeah, I'm glad
we'll took that part of Daniel not checking his team. Oh, wait, what do you mean it's a lot?
But guys, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back. I'll have an episode coming out with Joe Patrick on Friday, getting our thoughts on this class, talking about some of the same things, some different things. And then of course I'll be having early next week. I'll have Thor Nystrom back on to talk about the UDFA haul, because Thor actually has scouted all these UDFAs. I think he releases a list of 500 players that he scouts, and the Falcons UDFAs are on that list. So Thor will be bringing us in-depth takes on these UDFAs, which I think there's like maybe like 3 people in the entire world that actually have in-depth takes on these UDFAs that aren't on the Falcons staff. So I'm excited to hear about that, because I really know very little about these guys. It's always fun to get that information. And of course, we'll be bringing you even more draft breakdown content, you know, more sort of future focused talk as we get into the summer itself. But guys, thank you so much for joining us. I'm Kevin Knight. He's on Anikic, and thanks again to Daniel Flick for joining us on tonight's show. We will see you next time on the Falcoholic Live and the Dirty Birds of Bruce podcast. Have a great night, folks.
See you guys.
You know, when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks, that's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.